podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Today's episode is sponsored by Bear Attack Boxing. Buy boxers and for boxers, producing high quality boxing gloves, boxing equipment, Muay Thai, kickboxing, all sorts of fantastic boxing products. And I just want to bring your attention to a new product which has been brought out by Bear Attack Boxing, which is the Checkerboard Boxing Gloves. They are available in 12 ounce and for the price of only £39. The new Checkerboard Gloves are the ideal training glove for a beginner or a seasoned pro. With the lightweight feel and wrist flexibility, you can freely fire your shots while still having the hand and wrist protection that you need. Whether it's training on the pads or it's on the heavy bag, make sure you're training with Checkerboard Gloves. Go over and find them, bearattackboxing.co.uk. Find them on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Check out all the other available equipment that they produce. And again, you can find them, www.bearattackboxing.co.uk.
And right now, Thomas Hearns is an open book for Ray Leonard. Backs up against the ropes.
This is one of the most unusual calls by a referee in the history of the sport.
The first loss. A tremendous victory.
Leonard fighting off the ropes.
It happened. It happened. Uppercut by Douglas. Down goes Tyson. Hooks it. Right hand shot.
Excellent. Knocks out by Tyson.
Now slumps to the canvas.
The champion struggles to stay on his feet.
How do you like it?
Welcome, fight fans, to another episode of Legendary Nights with me, Sean Bastow, your host, shortly to be joined by Johnston Brown. And today's episode is all about the tale of Roberto Duran versus Sugar Ray Leonard back from 1980. This is the brawl in Montreal. But before we get into this episode, guys, please go over and follow us on social media at BTR Boxing Podcast on Twitter and also on Facebook too. Johnston, great to have you back on for Legendary Nights and another fantastic fight voted for by the users of Twitter again.
Oh, great selection. There was one on there, there was a few on there, some great fights from the 80s. But this one in particular definitely stood out. And yeah, what a great fight. Was it the boxer made a fighter, youth the experience, and was it fast hands versus stone hands? So yeah, well up for this. As soon as this was picked, I was bang on it, mate. So yeah, brilliant pick.
Yeah, brilliant pick by you guys, the listeners, you guys, the users of Twitter. Thank you so much for getting involved and voting for this particular fight. And I'm really looking forward to chatting about it. And this is the brawl in Montreal, as I said at the top of the show. This is the one that we're looking forward to speaking about. It's the first in a trilogy of fights that these went on to have. And it's a fantastic fight. So let's go in as always and talk about the guys, the careers in brief detail leading up to the fight. A little bit to do with the build-up and then also the fight itself. And this is going to be a different one because I think this is the first 15 round full completed fight that we've actually covered on Legendary Night, so this is going to be quite an interesting one to cover as well.
Yeah very much so. I mean, you know, 15 rounds is I'm a believer that I think maybe the championship fights would bring back the 15 rounds. So yeah, no stoppages, no one went down. So yeah, it was really great to watch back on. And as you say, first 15 rounder, bring it on.
So this is it then. We're going to talk about the careers of both men first going into this particular fight. And first of all, we start with Sugar Ray Leonard. Obviously, at this moment in time, he was the youth of the fight. He was the guy that was the youthful. You know, he'd not had as many fights as Duran at this point of his career. Obviously, he went to the Olympics. He won a medal. He turned professional in 1977. And then, obviously, he went on a great string of victories. You know, KOs, unanimous decision, retirements in the corner. And, he was doing really, really well. And his first piece of success came when he fought another absolute legend of the sport, in Wilfred Benitez in 1979, who was 38-0 with one draw in his record at the time.
Yeah, it was definitely a real test for him, wasn't it? He produced the goods. It was a difficult, obviously, you know, it was a big night for him. Another 15 rounder. He had Hagler on the same bill, actually, funny enough, and he actually got that draw with Vito and Tefermo, if I pronounce his name right. Great finish. 6 seconds left of that 15 round. Referee stopped it. Funny enough, it was the same referee as well as we have for the main and for the big fight, the Duran fight, which was Carlos Padilla. So interesting one. A great fight, and obviously one of the youngest champions, 15 years old, Wilfred Benitez, wasn't he? So great victory for Leonard, set him up nicely.
It really did, and it set him up, you know, for what his career was going to be, really, which was a legendary Hall of Fame career, as we know now. And Wilfred Benitez is, in his own, a legend himself, and people regard him as an absolute legend of the sport. So to pick up a victory against a guy who was 38-0 at the time, you know, he'd had 39 professional fights. Sugar Ray Leonard had had nowhere near that amount of fights. So to pick up that victory in the last round of the fight, unbelievable win for him. And then obviously he goes on to be Davey Boy Green, to defend the WBC welterweight title with another knockout victory before he got his fight and his big chance with Duran.
British boy, wasn't he? David Green had a good he sort of bigged himself up. He thought he could be, he had a chance of doing something against Leonard. Unfortunately, ended in the fourth round for him. Didn't quite work out. So it was an interesting fight just before. Well, I say just before, but around the 14th professional fight for Leonard, when he fought Floyd Mayweather Senior. There was actually an interesting point that I picked up on where they were actually touting Tommy Hearns. They were going to do Leonard v Tommy Hearns in 1978, which would have been interesting. And I actually picked up on how much the splits would have been. So if Leonard had fought Hearns and Angelo Dundee didn't go with the decision to fight Floyd Mayweather Sr. instead, then Leonard would have had £100,000 for the fight and on the split, and Hearns would have had 12.5K. So quite interesting, really, how it panned out. And luckily, it didn't. I say luckily, they were both great fights, but yeah, really interesting.
It's weird, isn't it? Because you forget about the fact that he fought Floyd Mayweather Senior. I mean, Floyd Mayweather Senior's obviously boxing career, you know, doesn't go anywhere near his son's boxing career, as we know. But it's a fact that it's the name that everybody knows today, Floyd Mayweather. And obviously Senior, as eccentric as he is, as we've seen in his later days, you know, it's crazy to think that you forget he was an actual professional fighter, and it was so long ago now that, you know, people don't really bring that up anymore as such. But yeah, like you said, in his 14th fight, yeah, there he fought Mayweather, could have possibly fought Hearns at this point, which would have been an interesting prospect given both men were on the rise at this point in their careers before they eventually go on to have that collision clash later on down the line. But that for Ray Leonard is really a little bit of a synopsis going into the Duran fight. He'd had obviously great experience. He was the WBC welterweight champion at the time going into the Duran fight, and he was the youthful fighter going in against the experienced Duran. Now Duran's career, obviously totally different. He started his career way back in 1968, all the way back in his home country of Panama, and a lot of the first 20-30 of his fights mostly consisted of taking place in Panama City before he eventually started to come over to New York in the early 70s. And then his first big test and his first big title win was actually against Scotland's Ken Buchanan.
An interesting fight, that one as well, because Buchanan had actually beaten Duran's hero, who was Ishmael Laguna, let me practice it right properly. So Ken Buchanan beat Laguna, and then he won the title from him, and then obviously he went on to repeat that. Laguna retired, and then obviously with Laguna being Duran's hero, he was quick to say, you know, this one's going to be for you, I'm going to get this win for you. And funny enough, I mean, Duran, his name wasn't even a hand of stone at the time. It was actually Rocky. They called him Rocky. So on the backs of all their jackets, they had Rocky on. And I think that comes from Rocky Graziano, probably Rocky Marciano as well, but I believe it was Rocky Graziano. So yeah, and it finished in the 13th round with it looked like a low blow. It was a big low blow, wasn't it? The referee must have missed it. But, I mean, he was winning the fight anyway. It didn't really matter too much. But, funny enough, Ken was quoted as saying that every time he passes his ball, he remembers Duran every time he sort of goes to the piss. So, quite interesting factory, I suppose. Great victory, though. Great victory. Picked up his first title.
Another one on his record that's quite interesting to look at is, but before he fought Buchanan, actually 1972, he actually fought a guy who, at the time he fought him, has got an absolutely mental record. And I don't know if anybody in history will obviously know this, because it's not something I think people will have initially picked up on, because it's not something that you see about about on Wikipedia or anything like that. So in 1972, he fought a gentleman by the name of Angel Robinson Garcia, or Angel Robinson Garcia, who at the time of the fight was 121 wins, 55 losses, and 19 draws on his record. That's some resume, that.
That is unbelievable. I must have missed that one. My God, that is unbelievable. I tell you what, that's a learning experience. What was that, a UD then? So I bet that was a hard, tough 10 rounds there for Duran. Quality.
I tell you what, that's some journeyman, that, isn't it?
A proper journeyman, mate. And, you know, a bit like, you know, with these Panamanians there. You know, they're just like the Mexicans, you know, the South Americans. They're all tough, aren't they? So, I mean, it's a tough thing to sort of work your career for. I mean, he fought 24 times in Panama before he actually lost his first loss, which obviously we'll move on to. But yeah, three times in Mexico, three times in the US. So 31, you know, it was at 31-1 he was. Well, 31, I mean, it's actually 31-0 before he went on to fight Esteban De Jesus, however you want to pronounce it.
He did, that's right, and that was his first loss on his record, unanimous decision loss, and it's, again, an interesting fight to look at because Esteban De Jesus, was 32-1 at the time he fought Duran, which was in Madison Square Garden in New York in November 1972. Something which we'll touch on a little bit later, a rematch with De Jesus was on the cards a little bit later on down the line. But then he retained and won back a world title up in the lightweight division, not three or four fights after he'd initially won it. And again, it was just for Duran, he was just, you get to see when you look over his career what a real warrior this guy was. The fact that he'd fought many a people, he beat Buchanan, got his first world title in 1972, loses to De Jesus in Madison Square Garden, and then comes back in his fight after that to win the same title he beat Buchanan for a year earlier.
Yeah, really interesting, because in actual fact, one thing we learn with Duran, sort of going through his story, is he does have this tendency to really milk his success. Funny enough, I mean, that Esteban defeat, although obviously he lost the fight, he ended up sort of going back to his dressing room and crying his eyes out when his actual team was sort of giving him the old, you know, Freddie Brown and Ray Arcel were sort of saying to him, you know, it's your own fault, you know, you've been out on the piss for the last God knows how long, celebrating your victory when you really should have been training. And he ended up overweight, and he came into the fight in a bit of a mess. But that's what he did. He liked his celebrationary binges. It was a common theme with Duran, and something obviously we'll learn after the Leonard fight as well.
Yeah, definitely. He's definitely something that I think was a big factor in part of his career, but it's never really hampered the fact that we look at him as a legend today, I suppose. So as we were saying then before, you know, he got that victory, got his WBA title back against Jimmy Robertson, then went on to have a string of victories, and then also fought again for the WBA lightweight title 1973 against Hector Thompson, picked up another victory there. And then there's another name on his record there, 1973, that I'm going to struggle to pronounce, but again, it was for the WBA World Lightweight title, Guts Ishimatsu.
Yeah, the Japanese for it, yeah. Yeah, good shout, done well there.
Yeah, Ishimatsu, he beat Guts Ishimatsu there in 1973, and he continues on again throughout the 1970s, significant fights there that he was involved in. Guys like Ray Lampkin, who he beat via KO, that was another one there to look back into. Lenico Ortiz, another fella there that you want to check out. Lou Bizarro, these are all names that won't be known to the household names, but people that listen to this podcast and listen to Legendary Nights, you're getting a bit of detail about the history, and people that are probably 45 or over will be sat there going, I know that fella, I remember that fella. And for guys like us who are in our 30s, you know, obviously we're the ones that are looking at the history books and looking at the fights that you can get access to, and some of these fellas were really tough fellas, and it doesn't really do justice to how tough of a career Duran really had.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, Duran, he had a total fight of 119, and I'll be honest with you, when I look through his record, obviously you can't go through every single fighter, but I'll probably say he probably had about 10, possibly 15 layups. Other than that, every single fight he was in was against tough fellas, and which just shows you how much of a warrior he was. And to be fair to the fella, to have all of his marbles after going into some wars is quite remarkable, really.
Yeah, it was. And we move a little bit forward now and fast forward to 1978 in Caesars Palace, Las Vegas. This was the rematch with Esteban de Zeus, and this was for the WBA title, which was held by Duran, and the WBC title, which was held by de Zeus at the time. So this was the rematch of their fight a couple of years earlier, and it was a victory for Roberto Duran in this one. So he picked up then two world titles and double champion at this point.
Yeah. I mean, he was it was quite. I mean, that was his third fight of Esteban as well. And they had a trilogy. So he obviously lost the one fight to him where he sort of came into the fight overweight and sort of, you know, in a bit worse for wears. And then obviously they had the two victories over him, one in the 10th, I believe, and one in the 12th, or a third was definitely in the 12th. He picked up that obviously he was the lineal lightweight champion. He had literally sweeped the lightweight division. Since that defeat against Esteban, he went on a 42-fight win streak. So, you know, he literally cleaned up the lightweight division. And just to touch on Esteban as well, Esteban was a heroin cocaine addict, sentenced to prison for murder due to shooting someone in a road traffic accident. And while he's in prison, he found out he had HIV and was released to die. So, bit of a sad story for Esteban. And you know, one thing about Duran is no matter how, you know, you look at him in the ring, and probably some of the things he says pre-fights, he was a monster, really, he was an animal. But when he actually come to things, you know, family and this particular instance of Esteban, he went and visited Esteban on his deathbed and he embraced him and kissed him, which might not seem a lot today, but you know, in 1978, when there was a misinformation about the disease at the time, that, you know, that just shows you know how he was quite clued up, you know, he knew what he was doing. So moving on.
Well, moving on from there on, he decided to move up a weight, and at that time there was no super lightweight division or old light welterweight division. It was just a straight jump to the welterweight division, which is what he did, and successfully did it as well, and went on a string of six or seven victories before he ends up getting into the fight that we're here to talk about today, which is the fight with Sugar Ray Leonard.
Obviously the last fight, a little lightweight, went to welterweight. I suppose the one question mark about Duran that people were saying was, did he carry that power? I think he only knocked out half of the guys he had fought. He had won a lot of sort of UDs, won on points, outpointed a few people. Probably the one just before that, well, wait, was Carlos Palomino, who was he's a big name. If anyone don't know about Carlos Palomino, he's a fantastic fighter. And funny enough, Carlos was actually, he literally had just lost a close decision to Wilfred Benitez, and it looked like he was going to fight Carlos in a rematch, and then obviously with Leonard working his way through, and he see obviously the paycheck, and he thought, actually I'm going to fight Leonard instead, and then Duran stepped in and obviously he beat Palermo. So yeah it was he started his career, what, a decade before Leonard, 1978, as you said, he started, and I believe, I think that he was like 60-odd fights, I think, something crazy like that into his career before he actually, before Leonard even turned pro. So, you know, it was youth against experience, and it was literally just a matter of, is Duran going to have the power at welterweight? And, you know, it was interesting, wasn't it? And would Leonard have a chin? So, it set up nicely. Really nicely.
Well, it's interesting because if you look at the tail of the tape leading up to this particular fight, at the time before the fight happened, we had Leonard at the age of 24 against Duran at the age of 29. The difference in the records was unbelievable. Ray Leonard, 27-0 at the time. Duran, 71-1 with 56 knockouts on his record against 18 KOs that Sugar Ray Leonard held on his record. But significantly, Sugar Ray Leonard was 3 inches taller. He was 5'10" against a 5'7" fighter in Roberto Duran, which again was quite interesting. And if you look at the reach advantages, there's an 8-inch reach advantage there for Sugar Ray Leonard going into this fight. So it was really interesting tale of the tape. Youth versus experience, guy with clear knockout power earlier on in his career down at the lightweight division. But as you rightly pointed out, I think it's quite interesting to note the fact that when you look at the record of Duran, when he moved up a weight, you didn't notice as many many knockouts on his record. You notice more decision fights, and that's where we get into to this particular fight and the build up to it.
Yeah, it was that was the one question I think everyone was asking at the time. Is, you know, they were always, you know, obviously we had the situation where people were looking at, you know, fast hands against stone hands, youth experience, Buck Kavita fighter, you know, etc. But it was it was an interesting build up. Obviously, you know, Leonard being the gold medalist, he won his gold medal in Montreal. So, you know, he picked Montreal himself. I think his team actually decided to have this fight in Montreal against Duran because he felt that the crowd would be on his side. When in actual fact, they weren't. Duran actually went out to Montreal a lot earlier than Leonard. And with Duran, if anyone knows about Duran in his hometown, you know, his home city of Panama, you know, he was always very welcoming. He would talk to anyone. So, you know, he was the sort of working class fella that the crowd took to, and he was the underdog, which is unusual. I mean, considering, you know, 71 fights, how could he be the underdog? But he was, you know, Leonard was 9-5 favourite. He was getting the bigger chunk of the money. I think he was getting sort of $8 to $10 million, and Duran was getting 1.5 million, which was his biggest purse. But yeah, underdog. But obviously, you know, it was setting up nicely, and you know, we had some war of words as well.
Oh yeah, unbelievable war of words. The build up to this was quite an interesting one. They labelled this fight as the brawl in Montreal, which I've mentioned a couple of times. It gained a lot of hype going into this one. This was one of the biggest fights of the era at the time, and we just started the 1980s, so the 80s had not really kicked in yet with all the music side of things, and it was just transitioning over from the 70s era into the 80s. So, you know, there was big transitions going on in culture, in lifestyle. This was actually Leonard's first fight back in Montreal since he won his Olympic gold medal in 1976. Obviously, with his flashy style, his personality and his markability, you know, he'd already made him this household name. Like you see today with the Olympians coming out fresh off the Olympic Games, they get this platform straight away. And even then, Sugar Ray Leonard was one of them fighters who was given that platform and given that name because people had watched him win a gold medal in the Olympics. Now, Leonard had won the WBC title after knocking out Wilfred Benitez, as we talked about earlier, in November 1979, defending it against Dave Green with a fourth round KO in March 1980. And then Duran, as we've again spoke about earlier, nicknamed Hands of Stone, developed the reputation as a dynamic knockout puncher in that lightweight division, and he unified them two titles, WBA and WBC, cleared it up 1978, knocked out WBC champion Esteban, as we said, and then he vacated the titles in 1979 at welterweight. So this was where we got really interesting, where the pre-press conference, Duran, you know, he must have felt a little bit threatened and the underdog in this one, because he repeatedly insulted Leonard in the build-up to this fight. He was repeatedly trying to get under Leonard's skin, and you could see that when you look back on the old videos of it. He's constantly trying to badger him and trying to get that psychological edge going into it, and it worked, because Sugar Ray Leonard, as brash as he was doing a Deontay Wilder and basically threatening to kill him during the fight.
yeah, there was some. He really got under his skin, and Leonard actually came out after, said that, you know, he really did, you know, he just didn't know what to do. He had never seen anything like this and had this guy sort of just badgering him, and he really sort of grabbed hold of the underdog status, didn't he, to Duran. And as you say, you know, he was telling him he's not a man, you're a chicken, you know, you was handed your success, I had to fight for mine. You know, he was always on the poor kid coming from the city of Panama, which he really liked that backdrop. And he was really winning that psychological battle, as you said. But Leonard was a bit like, as well, is this guy serious? Like, does he really want to kill me? And you can actually see in his face, he's just not feeling him whatsoever. He doesn't know what to do with himself. He ends up sort of biting back and trash talking himself, which is something that, you know, is completely not what Leonard was about at the time. And Duran actually did, well, he says that he didn't say this, but in his book he said, well, at the time, people mentioned that he said, "Your husband, no good. After I beat him, I F you." So he said, "What?" So, when he was questioned about the quote in his book, he still denies it to this day. But, you know, either way, he really did rub Leonard up the wrong way. And he was just, he was ready to you know, it worked, because, you know, Leonard was, as you say, he was the boxer, he was the guy that was going to do the moving, and he was going to be fighting on the outside. And he ended up not doing that. He ended up being completely different. He felt that, his manhood was being questioned, so he felt that he's going to stand toe-to-toe with this guy and he's going to beat him at his own fight. So it's really interesting, actually, just to see how the psychological side of things can really affect a fighter. And you know, he made decisions that, it didn't work in his favour.
No, and you're right in what you're saying there, because obviously, when you look at the history books and you look at the way Ray Leonard was as a fighter going into this particular fight, very flashy, very stylish, you know, very get in, get out, make you miss, make you pay. And that was his style. And going in against a guy like Gerani, who would want to take it into the trenches, you would anticipate that Ray Leonard, from the outset, would be the one that had control the fight. And obviously, as we go into this in a moment, it wasn't actually the case. Now, the trainer of Ray Leonard, Angelo Dundee, famous trainer there, advised Ray Leonard to box smart against Duran. Now, obviously, as we've said, Leonard was known for his quick movements, his boxing prowess, and yet he elected to fight toe-to-toe with Duran.
Yeah, he did. We actually, just before the fight as well, before we actually touched on the fight, there was an issue with Duran's health where he had an abnormal, I think it was an abnormal beat in his heart or something or other. I can't quite remember the ins and outs of it, but there was a slight problem with Duran's health. And funny enough, his trainer, Ray Arcel, did say a funny line, actually. He said, he sort of mentioned, this can't be true. He's got nothing wrong with his heart. And he actually said, because Duran doesn't have a heart. So that just shows you again the sort of guy that people, you know, he was a scary guy. And even just before Duran sort of come out to the ring in the fight as well, where Frazier was in the crowd, and one of the interviewers or reporters, whoever on site, said to him that, you know, who does this guy remind you of? Who does Duran remind you of? And thinking the response would be like me, as in Frazier, he actually said Charles Manson. So, you know, that's how scary Duran was considered. So, yeah, just a couple of interesting facts.
Yeah, definitely. Comical ones at the same time as well. It's brilliant to hear about, obviously, little intricate facts like that, and I'm sure, obviously, everybody listening is going to appreciate that. It's not all everything that you can find on the internet sometimes. It's not always something that you can look on Wikipedia and find. So big up to Johnston for finding out these little interesting facts about the fight and the lead-up to the fight. So going into it then, Johnston, this is it, the big fight itself. And as we were touching on a little bit earlier, both of us, the fact that we was expecting, if you was a fight fan at the time, I can imagine watching both of these fighters' careers up until this point, you would have expected Ray Leonard to completely outbox Roberto Duran in this fight. But as I alluded to earlier, this wasn't the case. He elected to go toe-to-toe from the off with him, which was quite a strange way to go about the job. And obviously, the fact that he got under his skin was quite clear to see now, looking back in hindsight, that he decided he really wanted to try and get Roberto Duran out of there. But when you look at the first few rounds of the fight, it really weren't working, because he was actually, Duran was making him miss some of Sugar Ray Leonard was actually well renowned for. And I was watching back on it, I was shocked to see it again. I was like, you're fighting in the same style as Ray Leonard. He's the guy known for the movement, he's the guy known for the quick reflexes, but yet Duran's head movement and lateral footwork was unbelievable.
Would you believe Duran is boxing him?
Yes, Morant, but he's stalking him. He's slowly cutting that distance between them. He's faking, he's slowly cutting, you see that?
Oh, he took a hard left hook, but he hit him back. Leonard wants to trade with him,
and Duran is willing to oblige.
Yeah, definitely, and his hands as well. One thing I noticed is people sort of obviously saying how fast Leonard's hands were. Duran had quick hands. I mean, they say hands of stone. This guy was, he went at him. His head was right on his chest from the very first minute. But you know, the one thing I remember is one of the commentators, is it Freddie Pacino? Probably murdered his name again, but he pointed out literally straight away, Leonard is flat footed. So you know, he obviously, as I say, these war of words, they affected Leonard. You know, as you say, you even pointed out as well that Angelo Dundee said to him, you know, you can't be fighting his fight. And it, clearly he Angelo Dundee's a clever guy, and he went against that. And it showed. I mean, second round was pretty clear. I mean, Duran's getting right inside, and he got his distance just right in that second round for me, and he sort of got under that jab, and he threw a right, and then obviously come across with a left, which wobbled Sugar Ray in the second round. And it wasn't a good start for Leonard, that's for sure.
Angelo says Leonard does not have to dance on him. He does not want him backing up with Duran. And Duran is willing to do his thing. He's got Duran backing up.
There's a lot of feigning going on here. They're both trying to feel each other out still in spite of that hectic first round. But the Leonard fast hands are something to see. Duran is charging in like the charge of the Light Brigade. He's almost throwing caution to the wind. You see that charge? It's intensity, it's fierceness, it's fighting. Duran is throwing caution to the wind. That could cost him because Sugar Ray Leonard is cool. Yes, he is.
Well, it wasn't, because what was happening was you were seeing throughout the course of the first few rounds that Duran was going through periods of time where he was actually trapping Ray Leonard in the corner, keeping him on the ropes and landing hurtful shots. And something that was really interesting about the fight was the fact that a lot of the fighters in today's era, when they talk about how they mirrored the way Duran used to fight, because they're trying to trap him, they're trying to cut the ring off, they're trying to get him in the corner, and they're trying to work to the body. And this was something that was really successful throughout the fight for Duran. And he built up a really big lead earlier on in the fight. And eventually this was what would really take him in to that second half of the fight, knowing that he'd had this big lead because he was trapping his opponent on the ropes constantly. You know, interesting stats about the particular fight. In between rounds 1 to 8, Ray Leonard spent just over 4 minutes on the ropes.
Wow. Yeah, that you watch it back and it is. He literally is pinned him back. His head's right on his chest, firing them big, powerful shots, really working the body. He was really sinking the shots in Duran as well. I mean, for me, I thought I had him winning those first four rounds. And then I thought Leonard just did enough for the fifth for me. He caught with a big left counter straight as his fifth round started, basically. And I just thought he showed that wonderful hand speed finally. I think he just found a little bit of room. I think maybe Duran decided he's won those first four rounds pretty clearly, that he's thinking he has a little breather, if you like. And that was the one thing that he couldn't do. And one thing that Customato actually said as well was that, you know, if Duran stays on top of Leonard, then he wins the fight. As soon as Duran rests, then Leonard will use his superb skills and win the fight. And I think the fifth was quite evident in that. And that was a great piece of advice from Cust. And it's basically how the fight ended out. And you know, the constant pressure from Duran, was unbelievable, really. And it was just it was just so entertaining. And just and this, it wasn't just like two guys sort of just going at it. There was so much skill involved in terms of when you actually watched the way, you know, that the ducking and weaving, and Duran just had that ability, didn't he, to just sort of it was just out of reach, and then Leonard would come back. And I mean, the first sort of part, it was obviously all Duran, but yeah, it wasn't just a straight I'm going to punch the living shit out of each other. It was a lot more technical and highly skilled than that. And when you watch it and you really watch it properly, it is fantastic to watch, especially, I mean, the whole fight, but you know, just up to the fifth and the sixth rounds as well, into the seventh.
Ray Arcel said we'll tell by round number 7 whether they've got second wind. Duran now is fighting the way he did in 71 when they called him Rocky after Rocky Graziano.
Yeah, it was, and I think them first 8 rounds were the significant rounds, particular for Roberto Duran, because this is where he did the majority of his work in building that lead up that I was talking about earlier. You know, like I said, between them first 8 rounds, he spent 4 minutes on the ropes, Ray Leonard, which was an average time of 30 seconds per round, and he absorbed 97 punches within that period of time whilst being on the ropes. And that was evident from the punishing body shots that were thrown by Roberto Duran, and that you know, evidently for me, is what really took the fight in his favour going into the second half of the fight. And you've got to remember, we're talking about a 15 round fight and not a 12 round fight here. So from sort of rounds 1 to 8, that's the first half of your fight, really. Getting in from rounds 9 to 15 is where it started to turn the tide a little bit, because you get to sort of pushing forward from round 6, 7, 8 going into the 9th and 10th. It started to really turn around for Ray Leonard at this point, because he began to fight a little bit closer to his natural style. And because Duran had set this ferocious pace for the first half of the fight, you know, Duran was starting to rest. Fatigue, you could tell, was starting to kick in at this point. He'd expended a lot of energy over the first course of that 8 rounds, and that's where you started to see Ray Leonard take control a little bit more. But that's not to say that's how it ended up, because it didn't, because although Ray Leonard started to take control a little bit, Duran just sometimes just seemed to have this second wind in between the rounds.
Yeah, definitely, I completely agree with that. You know, with I think for me, I think Leonard won the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, maybe. No, actually, not the seventh, but yeah, I think Duran won the eighth and the ninth. But there was a key part where Leonard was starting to, as you say, sort of that half part of the fight where Duran was, you know, he had literally been ferocious and just working the body and mixing up the shots, body and head. But Leonard was just finding that little bit of space, and he was just throwing some eye catching shots. But then, and I think Duran sort of realised this, and it was about the ninth round where he roughed him up a little bit. Duran got dirty, and he sort of pushed his head against Leonard's, and he sort of skidded it across the top of his head, and you could see he was trying to do something. And funny enough, I think that was what, I'm not sure if it was the head or if it was a shot, but I believe it was the head that opened the cut up on Leonard as well, on his right eye.
It was interesting then, because that cut obviously started to play a little bit of a factor into the fight, because when you think that Ray Leonard's actually starting to take control, obviously that's where Duran, you know, no pun intended here, but he smells blood basically, and he starts to go back to the style of trying to corner Ray Leonard again and go back to that aggressive style. It's like he had a second wind. It's like he had a bit of Aaron Pryor's drink, you know, obviously pre that time, but it was like he'd had this magical resurgence of energy going into that then, and then he started to come back into the slugfest side of things, and he brought Ray Leonard back into his style of fight again. Whilst Ray Leonard was starting to box beautifully again, it was interesting to see how Duran had then started to bring it back down to his level and his pace again, because over the course of their next three or four rounds, it started to turn into a real slugfest, because both guys obviously evidently knackered at this point. You know, fatigue is really setting for both of them, and it was actually really good last few rounds. And there's one particular round which I can't remember off the top of my head, but as the end of the fight, I think it was maybe, it might have even been the last round of the fight, there was a moment where Sugar Ray Leonard, he's on the offense and he's throwing combination punches at Duran, and Duran's head movement was just, he avoided every single punch that Ray Leonard had threw. He telegraphed every single one. It was like, this is what Ray Leonard should be doing to you right now.
Oh, it was beautiful. I've not got it down. I don't see what round that was in, but I know exactly what you're talking about. It was unreal. When he's literally sort of throwing those wild, it was almost like literally wild swings from Leonard, which is so not like him, and to miss so many times. And just to be in such, like, he's literally in the pocket. His head, he was obviously short, but he's going right under the shots, bobbing and weaving. And it was quality. I mean, the one round I've got on here was the 11th round, which was a real ebb and flow.
They met at the middle and exchanged punches. Neither one effective. Neither one. Duran doesn't look tired at all, and Leonard is punching like he isn't. He got hit very low. Leonard just got hit very low just then. That isn't the first time a Duran fight has seen that. He holds no part of the man's body sacrosanct. He's a pit fighter. He's just throwing punches. Wherever a good right hand landed on Duran. A good right hand. As Leonard goes, Duran comes back.
Right back.
No advantage to either one.
And just defensively and the selection of shots from the pair of them, I was sort of tempted to go and give this that 11th round a draw, which if I had have done that, because I was running through the scores again, I would have had it as a draw, which is interesting. So I didn't give it. I could actually give the round 11 to Duran, which effectively wins in the fight. But it was just that was a beautiful round. The round 11 and then round 13 was another great, great round. I mean, they're all brilliant to watch, but there was an outstanding exchange, which I believe Leonard just edged in round 13. And for me, he won those last three rounds, Leonard. Duran was eating some big right-handers in the 14th. And then you had Leonard where he loaded up that bolo punch of his. But when he actually threw it, it looked great. And then when we actually watched the replay, again, Duran blocks it. So, you couldn't quite see that. Obviously, today with so many replays, you would have seen that Duran Duran's blocked it, but it looked great for Leonard. So yeah, I mean, leading into that 15th round, it really was even. It really was. I mean, it's weird because you score it and you sort of, while you're watching it, you're thinking Duran's in front, but yet when you look at your scores, it's actually really close. So that last round was big for Leonard. Leonard needed to win that, and I believe Duran sort of stepped off because he thought he had it won. So you could see from the way they approached that last round, the corners and the fighters, as to who they thought was winning the fight. So whether you score it or not, I still believe Duran won the fight. I mean, as I say, that one particular round, you could go draw, which was, ironically, you know, there was three even rounds, so which was really interesting for the judges.
It was interesting for the judges because the post-fight decision actually left a lot of people very bemused because the judges made a little bit of a scoring error, and eventually when the scoring error was rectified, Duran had won the fight by unanimous decision, 145-144, 148-147, and 146-144. So he'd been given all three cards, but they were very, very, very close. Like you said, it was actually really, really close than what a lot of people might have made it out to be in it. And I suppose that brings it back to what we said earlier about the fight being, you know, it was a tale of two halves, really. You had Duran rounds 1-8, and sort of rounds 9-15 was more where Leonard look to take over, and that 15th round, like you were saying there, was actually quite eventful, because you can see at this point Duran thinks he's won the fight and he believes he's won the fight because he's starting to taunt Ray Leonard a little bit, and he starts to sort of faint and move around and start to just duck and weave and bob and weave, and it was all just quite a lot of bravado in that final sort of 30 seconds of the fight. And obviously when the bell went, straight away, you know, Duran's the one with his hand up. You can tell usually at the end of the fight, you can tell who the winner is because of the body language, and Duran was obviously, you know, he felt he was the winner, and I think Ray Leonard looked like he'd kind of conceded himself a little bit to defeat.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, that 15th round is, you could sort of see Leonard sort of throwing the bolo punch, for instance, in the 14th round, and in the 15th round, he stood up before the bell rang, start the 15th, sort of to say, I'm all right, and he sort of waved Duran in while Duran just sort of sat back. So just from that, whether it was Leonard was trying to use a bit of mental, you know, to the judges, maybe to the crowd, to say, like, you know, come on, I've got this, I'm fine, you know, look what I've done at the end of the day. I mean, that for me is what Leonard set out to do. He wanted to win the fight, obviously didn't want to lose his unbeaten record or his titles, but the one thing with him is that he proved to everybody that was watching that I had a chin. And as you said, I mean, the craziness of the judges is, I mean, he totaled them up wrong. And then half hour later, is it Peretti, would it, the judge? What an absolute Norman. such a massive fight. And the judge can't add up the scorecard. I mean, what on earth? It is pretty incredible. And the fact that three rounds, the 7th, the 9th, and the 11th, all three judges put it even. It was quite remarkable, really. And I mean, I'm not a judge. I don't know how you feel with it, but did you have an even round? How did you score it in the end?
I think watching it back again now, you have to score it really, really close. And I think if it was being judged in this day and age, the way the judges are today, I think it wouldn't have surprised me if they would have actually ended up giving it to Ray Leonard, to be honest with you, because there were a few rounds which I think were quite controversial, where you kind of feel like actually this could have been scored either way, and with a different set of judges, you probably would have got a different. There's no question about that. I think it was. I think at the time, Duran definitely won the fight, and I think he won it by at least one round on two of the cards. And if I was scoring it, I'd say at least one round on two cards, and probably two rounds on the third card, because it was that close. It was that close knit. Although at times it didn't look that way, and I think that's because that first eight rounds left a lasting impression on people, because nobody was expecting Duran to be able to come in there and completely outgun a guy who was so brash, so stylish, you know, who could have made that fight a lot easier for himself.
Yeah, 100%, he could have made the fight a lot easier for himself. And I mean, I just think he did. He got caught up in psychological warfare with Duran, and he obviously, you know, he was upset with what he said about his wife, and he's telling his brother that he's going to kill him. So he just got it all wrong. I mean, even Angelo Dundee after the fight, he said, "You never fight to a guy's strength. You try to offset it," and Ray didn't. He tried to outstrong the guy, and Duran was being Duran, and Ray was just going with him. So, you know, Angelo couldn't be any more right. And, you know, obviously we see further on the way to fight Duran. But, yeah, it was a great fight to watch. It was a spectacle, and it was brilliant. It was probably the best out of all of them. You know, when you think of the Fabulous Four, for instance, it is the one that opened the gateway to all these multi-million dollar fights for the lower weight guys. So, yeah, it was just fantastic to watch. And but yeah, you know, it was interesting how the fight ended. And Leonard, you could see it took forever for the announcer to actually come out with the scorecards. And I think it was his brother, Leonard's brother, that was sort of touching him, taking the sweat away from his eyes, because his eyes were swollen, and you could see the pain in Leonard's face. So he even said, he called himself Anderson Stones, I felt like I was getting hit by bricks in there. So, you know, Duran, I mean, I just have to think what that felt like in there.
Yeah, no, me too. I wouldn't want to have been involved in that one for sure. It's such a painstaking fight to have gone through, and grueling fight to have gone through. And just touching on what you said there, this was the pioneering fight of that Fab Four era, and this kind of leads us nicely on into the aftermath for both guys, because obviously these two guys would eventually go on to fight twice, both of them, you know, interesting fights in themselves, really, because you've got a rematch that, you know, obviously Duran had with Ray Leonard, and that was the infamous No Mask fight, where we all know about that, and we all know what happened, and we all know that Duran basically quit on his stool in that particular fight, which was something that you'd never really seen in boxing history before at this point in time. So that was unbelievably interesting that actually had happened, and that was immediately after this. So this was the No Mask fight occurred in the November of the same year after this initial fight in Montreal, and Duran himself would then go on to be involved in some unbelievable fights, unbelievable nights. He fought Wilfred Benitez again. He lost to Wilfred Benitez. He'd moved up yet again. He'd fought for the super welterweight title. So he'd fought there for that, and then he moves on. He fought Davey Moore. He beat Davey Moore, won the super welterweight title. He then fought Marvin Hagler and lost to Marvin Hagler. Then he fought Thomas Hearns, and then you just kind of go through his career, and it's ridiculous. Another cracking fight of Duran's that I must touch on. That I think people, it's a fight that's really, really badly under. He's fighting 1989 for the middleweight title against Iron Barclay. What an unbelievable fight he was involved in that one as well.
Oh, that it was. I mean, the size difference was incredible, wasn't it? You thought, how on earth is Duran fighting this fella for a start? No one gave him a chance again. The man he feared for his life, which is interesting, because you find a lot of these guys, like your Duran, your Leonards as well, when he had the situation with Hagler, and obviously we go on to that. And Ali, for instance, with Foreman. With these guys, this is what makes them that little bit. You know, that's what gives them the edge. That's what puts them in the pound for pound greatest of all time. And that fight against Barclay showed that for me. I mean, he's taken it was just unreal. I mean, when I was watching the fight, you're thinking, you could just see the difference. What, how did this guy fight in the middleweight? I know he obviously bloomed up a little bit, but he doesn't lose his height. He's still a short guy, and he does put him down as well, doesn't he? It was a big shot. He does put him down. Barclay,
yeah,
doesn't he?
He does. Yeah.
Duran puts Barclay down. Yeah, yeah. And then obviously he goes on to win the split decision, and obviously to win the middleweight title. So that was three world titles. He was picked out in three different weight divisions, which is incredible. And obviously the man was just unbelievable to start your career in 1988, and it's still be going on until 2001. It's just unbelievable.
It was unbelievable.
Obviously, went too far, but you know, yeah. But we'll move on again from Barclay after that. I mean, it's just endless. I'm just sort of just. I think for me that, you know, the William Joppy fight was the one that was the one. It was quite sad to watch. Actually, he got beat up pretty bad. He got stopped, but yeah, it just started to deteriorate. It was sort of like three stages to Duran. You had the lightweight. You had a decade before he even fought Leonard. So even before he fought Leonard, he was his whole first part of his career, and then he had the career with the Fabulous Four, and then after that it sort of just continued. But the guy was just sensational.
No, he was, and you've got to give him a huge respect for what he went on. You got the Aaron Barkley fight, and just quickly touching on some of the other fights there that he had and that he was involved in. He fought Ray Leonard for a third time and lost that world super middleweight title. And then we go on and we get other fights involved with Vinny Pazienza. He fought again. That was a super middleweight bout as well. And then he also fought... Hector Macho Camacho. He fought him for the middleweight title. So he was up and down in weights. He's ridiculous. So he eventually went up and fought a super middleweight from being a lightweight. That sort of jump in today's age is like when Amir Khan went up and fought Canelo, or Kell Brook went up and fought Golovkin. It's the same thing. It's ridiculous amount of jumping up in weights that he ended up doing over the years. But obviously that's because he got older. The booze and the drugs and all the rest outside the ring obviously was taking its toll. So eventually he was never going to be able to make that lightweight and welterweight limit again anyway. So he eventually just moved up and tried to fight a 5'7" guy, fighting guys that are 6 foot and over. It was unbelievable. But yeah, sad ending really for him, that he ended up going and fighting guys like William Joppy, and then his final fight was in 2001, as you say, against Hector Macho Camacho, which he lost a unanimous decision, and finally he finally called it a day. So what's 1968 to 2001, how many years is that? That's about 33 years he was an active fighter.
33 years, yeah.
Unbelievable.
You saying how he was moving through the weights. One thing we probably didn't touch on after the first fight against Leonard was it had come around so quickly, and obviously, as he already mentioned, after he beat Ken Butcher, and he went on that mad celebratory binge, and he'd done the same thing after the Leonard fight. I mean, he come back to sort of thousands. He welcomed back in as a hero in Panama City. So he was, everybody wanted to be around him, and he loved the life. So, he went on another binge, basically. Even was quoted saying, I was partying, eating, drinking. I mean, he was doubling up his words, because he was over doubly indulging. Like, this geezer was just out every night. And then partying, and actually, the funny story is when he was actually partying in New York City around September time, it was Carlos Electra that actually called him up and said to him, you've got a rematch in November. And Duran said, are you fucking crazy? I weigh nearly 200 pounds. I can't drop all that weight in a month. So I weren't surprised that he ended up sort of, calling it no mask. Apparently, he still says to this day he didn't say no mask, something else, which was no cigar, which is, I can't go on. But it was no mask. I mean, no one cares anymore. It was no mask, get over it, mate. Brilliant. Great career, and just unbelievable stories. I mean, you could go, it's endless, this guy. I mean, the fights, and the guys he fought even beyond when he was way beyond his best. He's still going 12 rounds with these guys, you know what I mean? It's as you even mentioned with Amir Khan, he got floored badly, knocked out badly by Canelo. This guy didn't really get knocked out completely. I mean, the Hearns is probably the only knockout. Other than that, it was all just stoppages. He always got up from his knockdowns. So for all we mentioned his hands of stone, we mentioned everything else that was great about Durant, the guy had an iron chin as well. It was just a remarkable fighter. And for me, he will go down as the best lightweight. For me, I always will put, I mean, you could put Benny Leonard in there. Emery Armstrong's probably a close one too, but he's definitely, that lightweight career for me, with Durant at his best, which is sometimes a little bit overlooked, but he was outstanding fighter, and just crazy to know that he was still fighting when I was around, and from 68 and then onwards, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it was. And then we go into Ray Leonard. Then let's touch on the aftermath for Sugar Ray, because obviously he, just as much as Duran, had an unbelievable Hall of Fame worthy career. Do you know the fact that he then went on to beat Duran in the rematch, as we say, he had some unbelievable fights. Tommy Hearns in 1981, fantastic fight that we may come up in Legendary Nights in the future. It's one that, again, I'd probably love to cover for Legendary Nights. We got the retirement, 3 years out, comes back in 1987, fights Marvin Hagler, in a controversial split decision, beats Marvin Hagler, and then comes back 1988 and he wins the vacant WBC World Super Middleweight title and the WBC Light Heavyweight title, which I've not really looked too much into this one, but I didn't realise he was able to have two titles in the same in the different weights in the same night. But this, according to the records, against Donny Lalonde in 1988, he fought and won the WBC World Super Middleweight title and then the WBC World Light Heavyweight title.
Yeah, that is, yeah, the in angle. Yeah, I'm seeing that myself now. That was a great fight. It's all that Donny fight, wasn't it? It was pretty, that blonde bonnet of his. I mean, that's got to be the worst doing the business, isn't it?
Truly 80s air style, that.
Unbelievable, isn't it? Yeah, look, Pat Sharp, didn't he? Remember Pat Sharp, for Fun House.
Fun House, yeah.
Again, I mean, Leonard is... The both of these fellas were just... They were there, weren't they? If you're doing your top 10 pound for pound, I would, great of all time, you're going to put these two in. I always do. Maybe other people wouldn't, but they are unbelievable. And with Leonard, I mean, the one famous thing I reminds me of that Hearn fight was a fantastic fight. So that first fight, thank God they didn't fight when it was his 14th pro fight for Leonard. For one, they weren't a mint in that fight, but that was always famous for Dundee's you're blowing it, the rally cry, and Leonard ended up coming out and stopping Hearns, which was just, again, what a sensational fight. And as you say, the Hagler fight was, again, you know, after so long out, this is again the point with Leonard, isn't it? Leonard and your Arlies and Glam, where people are sort of saying they're fearing for their lives, and they go in there and they beat them or draw with them. Well, I mean, they beat them. End of the day, it was so close to fight. I couldn't even pick a winner. I think I've watched it a couple of times. I scored it a draw as well. I'm calling it a draw, but you know, it was a split decision win for Leonard, which, to be fair, was, you know, what, unbelievable. Again, unreal.
Yeah, I agree. And going back to the end of his career, he obviously rematched with Thomas Hearns, which was up in the super middleweight division, 1989. That was a draw. Obviously, we talked about the Duran fight, the rematch in 1989. He then comes back in 91, fights Terry Norris, loses in the challenge for the light middleweight / super welterweight title, and then leaves it 6 years before deciding to come back and fight again one more time against Hector Macho Camacho, which he lost, which was quite sad to see at this point. I think he was no way he was going to be able to rekindle the magic again after 6 years out, and obviously a lot more in his, you know, past his prime at this point. He was an older man at this point. Let's have it right. I think he was about 41 when he came back and fought Camacho. He was way past his best, but that's how he ended his career. He ended it trying to go out like a champion, and I think everything he'd done up until this point had already put him in the Hall of Fame. And unbelievable career. The 80s was Sugar Ray Leonard.
100%. Sugar Ray Leonard was, he was a wonderful fighter to watch. His hand speed, you know, his distances, he showed everything, really, didn't he? When he was on form, Leonard, I challenge anyone to an on-form Leonard, I can't think, maybe you could, obviously, Sugar Ray Robinson in there, but at welterweight, it was just outstanding. And you know, we talk about, obviously, the Fabulous Four. He had the three fights with Duran, won two, lost one. Drew with Hearns, beat Hagler. So, you know, I would say he probably was the guy. He was the face of it all, really. He had the money, he had the backing. And, you know, he was just a fantastic fighter. And, you know, if there are people out there that haven't seen enough of him, go and watch his fights. You know, watch Hearns, watch Duran, especially the first one. Watch the second one. He literally, you know, the second fight, he even said himself, the No-Mass fight, he said, I wanted the rematch straight away, because he knew that Duran was going to go out on this mad binge and he'd be well overweight and he could take advantage of it. He was a smart man. He was a smart guy. Still is today. Got all his faculties, you know. So, the one thing you will say, probably the annoying thing is for all of his greatness, he had those massive chunks when he didn't fight. I mean, I know he put it down to, I think it come down to his eye, wasn't it?
I think
it might have been, was it after the Tommy Hearns second fight, wasn't it, the draw? Yeah, no, it wasn't. No, it was Duran, wasn't it? It was Duran, sorry. Because he had 89 and then he came back to fight that Terry Norris. Yeah, so, even before that, we're talking about, no, it was Kevin Howard then. So he took 3 years out of the ring before he came back and fought Hagler. So he had those gaps. So it's a shame, because if he didn't have the problems with his eye. You know, who knows? He could have gone on to do even greater things. And it's unbelievable, really, to think that. But yeah, 40 fights. And obviously, the last sort of two, you can probably say, the Terry Norris, he shouldn't have come out for that. And Hector Camacho, again, he should have just called it a day, to be honest, and just retired. But, you know, this is what these guys do. This is what Ali did. That's what Duran did. Duran fought on to, he was, what, 49-50, and the only reason why he stopped was for a car accident. Otherwise, he would still be fighting today, probably, at 60.
Yeah, no, and I tell you what, it really hits home when you discuss the fights and fighters and the Hall of Fame careers that they've had. And it's been an unbelievable look back at, you know, the real detail of the fights. And he's not just talking about the fights, he's talking about the surround factors of the fight, the aftermath of the fight. And when you put it into perspective, it really hits home how significant this particular fight was in boxing history. For the sole fact is that, you know, it was the biggest win of Duran's career. It really taught Sugar Ray Leonard a lesson which led him on to greater things. And, it's definitely a significant point in boxing history. And again, I can only really say thank you to all the people that voted for this episode. It was a fantastic episode to cover, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a great one to cover, and just going back through all some of the old archive stuff that I've dug through, and just watching some of the fights again. And one thing just before we go as well is one thing that I'll pick up on was the Bob Arum quote after the fight, the post-fight interview. And one thing he said is, this is the beginning of a revelation in boxing and television, because it means we are moving closer to the day when almost all boxing will be seen not on network television, but on pay cable. And I think he was spot on there, wasn't he?
I tell you what,
because this is what, go on.
He definitely foreshadowed the future, didn't he, with that comment?
Unbelievable, really. And he even went on to say, we have seen the last of big fights on network television. The networks know they have only 2 years left of boxing. And Don King followed it up by basically saying that, you know, if willing prescribers can pay $3 a fight. $3 a fight. I mean, he's got on ridiculous amounts of money nowadays. So they obviously see something. They picked up on the fact that pay-per-view was the way to go with boxing. And Duran and Leonard, they were the ones that, they were the pioneers, as you said, they were pioneers. For that, they opened the gateway to these multi-million fights that were not heavyweight fights. And that is another big point. These guys were welterweights. 147s, and then obviously went up to the middleweights. And you think about Hagler, and obviously what they went on to the weights they went into fighting. So not only was it a fantastic fight, but it was a pioneer fight, as you put it rightly. And fantastic to cover, and I loved every minute of it.
So that's it then, guys. This is the episode and the tale of Duran versus Leonard, done and dusted. And we really hope that you've enjoyed listening to this episode. Some of the factual information, some of the build up, some of the aftermath. It's been an unbelievable experience to go back and look at all these factors and look at this fight in particular. So if you're really pumped about the fight, go and watch it now, because you've just listened to us talk about all the little intricate details about it. Get yourself straight onto YouTube, get it watched, and I'm telling you, if you've not seen this fight before, you will not be disappointed in this fight whatsoever. So that's it. Again, thank you for listening. Thanks so much for subscribing, retweeting, sharing, liking, doing anything that you guys do. It's always really appreciated from myself and from Johnston. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you on the next episode of BTL Boxing Podcast Legendary Nights.
And right now, Thomas Hearns is an open book to Ray Leonard. Backs up against the ropes.
This is one of the most unusual calls by a referee in the history of the sport.
The first loss,
a tremendous victory.
Uppercut by Douglas. Down goes Tyson.
Hooks in, right hand shot.
Absorbs. Knocked out by Tyson.
Now slumps to the canvas.
The champion struggles to stay on his feet.
How do you like it? How do you like it?
Sports Social Podcast Network.